The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
Our goals for today. The first one is to know what culture looks like on the college campus. I think you all heard the main speaker this morning talking about how we're kind of dizzy chasing down culture. Culture is constantly evolving. And so when it comes to the college campus, who are the students on today's college campus? What makes them passionate? What excites them? What are their fears? We want to help you understand a little bit about the culture of college students today. Secondly, we want you guys to walk away with some very basic practical steps to reach the college campus that's closest to you. And then lastly, we want to make ourselves available to you all in order for you to accomplish that task. How many of you, by show of hands, are a pastor or some type of church leader of college students? Great. Okay. And then how many of you are just lay people who are just interested or passionate about reaching college students? That's great. So somebody tell me, why are you excited about reaching college students? They're our future. Amen. Yeah. The fields are ripe. Yep. Anybody else? Why are you passionate about reaching college students?
I think that's a group that tends to drift away from church as they leave home or leave their church and go to a college, especially in another town or maybe another state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they need to have some type of connection.
Yeah.
To expand on that, there's a big need, especially college-age men.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
I just know what it was like for me many, many years ago to be on a Baptist campus and the fellowship with other Christians, and as we would go out to churches across the state on weekends and other things like that and try to reach our fellow students on the campus where we were. I'd love to see students today have that joy and opportunity.
Yeah.
To be a part of that.
Yeah.
That ministry.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. I had a great experience in college. My faith really grew. And I actually work for a college, and there's a lot of students there that love the Lord.
Yeah.
They really are. I mean, they get a bad rap, but that's just what makes the news. There's so many students that are really on fire for the Lord, and
mm-hmm.
I just want people to support them and know that God's working.
Yeah.
And they're serving God, and it's their faith is just vibrant. It's awesome to be around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing for me is it's a transitional time of life, so they're open.
Mm-hmm.
They're learning, they're seeking. But secondly, if it is your kid that left your college, they're also open in their transition and learning. And we lose a lot of kids in that transition time because there's nothing there for them. But there's also a lot of kids that were never, ever reached by the gospel that this may be the one time in their life they're open to it. So it's a both and for me.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. I just think back to my story in college. I grew up in a Baptist church and would have said I was a Christian for a number of years, but really understood the gospel when I got to college and got involved in a local church and was discipled by one of the pastors there. That's when I really began to grow in my walk. And it was in that moment that I kind of decided, like, God, I want to give my life to reaching college students and seeing college students transformed by the gospel. And so I think all of us in this room, we have one commonality, and that is we're passionate about college students. We're here because we want to see college students changed. And so that is the main thing for today, is we want to come alongside of you to do that. One thing that I wanted to define real quickly before Tom Knight comes up is our main speaker this morning. He probably didn't say it, but he has a book and he's written a book, and he defined culture in its most basic sense as it refers to what people do with the world, what we build, what we invent, what we imagine, what we create, what we tear down, what we replace, what we compose, design, emphasize, dismiss, embellish, and what we engineer. And if you're like me, I'm like, wow, that's a lot. But culture, this is what culture is. And so Tom Knight is one of the guys on our team. He's going to come up and he's going to share a little bit more specifically about what the college campus looks like right now. He's going to give you some information about Generation Z. I'm a millennial, and so my generation has slowly shifted off the college campus, and now the college campus is filled with Generation Z. And so he is an expert, a guru, a very smart man who's going to come and kind of give you a little vision of what the landscape of college ministry looks like now.
Well, thank you for being here. I'm excited to talk with you guys. I am an old Gen Z person, Gen X, see, I can't remember, Gen X person, and I like to call my generation the Prince Charles generation. We're the generation that people just want to go away, so that the, you know, the older generation, the boomers, like Queen Elizabeth can be regal, and then, you know, Prince William coming up, he can be the next one to take over. So for many years, everyone has been focused on millennials. And it's been frustrating because we knew that Gen Z was going to come in and take over the campus, and that's officially happened. And so we still have a lot of people talking about millennials on the college campus. And for the most part, they're not there unless you're at a community college. And so what I wanted to do was just give you some snapshots, a couple of ways to think about Gen Z. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to have some things on the slide that you can follow as we go along. But it's going to be very easy. I won't go too much into detail. If you have some questions you want to ask, we maybe have a few minutes for that. And then for any other things that you need to ask questions on, we'll do that at the end. And we're going to hang around. And those of us with the shirts on, you can ask us questions. And we've got Evan back here on our team as well. And so we'd love to hang out and talk with you. So the first one, now some of the things I'm going to talk about are what I call hard facts, things that are hard to make go away, and some of them are a little bit more squishy, but the two first things are pretty hard, and that is Gen Z is going to be the largest generation that we've had. And so this year they're going to overtake millennials. And so first we had, you know, baby boomers, that was the big one, and millennials overtook the baby boomers, and now Gen Z going forward are going to be bigger than millennials. So whatever hype you've heard about millennials, now Gen Z is going to be bigger, all right? The other thing that's very important is Gen Z is also going to be the most diverse generation that we've had. And so we have several states already, what they're called majority-minority states, where there is no dominant group of people with more than 50%. And so California, Hawaii, Texas, Arizona, or New Mexico, I think, they're already there, and eventually the whole country is going to be that way. We're going to have, we're not going to have, you know, something that's 63% or even 55%. We're going to have, you know, 20s and 10s and 30s and maybe a 40s, something like that. And that's going to change the dynamics of how we interact with people, interact with students, interact with churches. And so Generation Z is used to that. They're used to being around other people who are different than them. One of the fastest growing demographics are biracial or multiracial people. And I am a fifth generation North Carolinian on both sides of my family. All right? I'm about as much of a Tar Heel as you can get. I am married to a person from China. I have biracial children. Right? So my Gen Z kids are fitting part of this demographic. Right? I don't think anybody in my family before me could even have thought of marrying someone who was not Caucasian. It just wouldn't happen in Yancey County, okay? So that's a big difference. The third one is these Gen Z people have always grown up with technology in the form of the internet, computers, smartphones, social media. They are digital natives. They didn't immigrate into this digital technology. They didn't have to, you know, learn it and adapt to it. They were born with it being all around them. And it's changing them in ways that we don't even know yet. And so we're still figuring that out. We're still trying to understand it. You've got some people who say it's not a big deal. You've got other people who are saying we're on the verge of a mental health crisis because of what's going on with these smartphones and social media and how people are, you know, comparing themselves to this level they cannot achieve, right? And people staying home alone in their rooms with a cell phone, and they're not interacting with real people around them. So we need more research on that. And just a little caveat, too. Generation Z is still very young. The oldest ones are college seniors this year. So there's a lot of those Gen Z children still coming through. We don't really know where they're going to land in their beliefs and habits. We're still figuring that out. So we're really on the front end of it. Christian Smith is an author that I like to read, and he's written a lot about spiritual life of people in high school and college, and he has a point that he makes is that millennials, starting with millennials, and certainly would carry over into Gen Z, they're what he calls morally adrift, and that, as you heard in some of the sessions today probably, there's what one person has called a crisis of knowledge, that people don't think that morality and religion and spirituality can really give you truth. And so that's really impacted how people are processing and thinking about how they should live their lives, how do they make moral decisions. A lot of people don't even know how to make moral decisions. They don't even know. Sometimes on these surveys, they don't even know what that means. What is a moral decision? They're not even sure. And so Barna, who's been tracking this information longer than, say, Christian Smith, but they have a definition of a biblical worldview, and boomers had about 10% of them had a biblical worldview. That's a very specific definition. But Gen Z is already down to 4%. So you can see it's just going down rapidly. So that's one of the issues that we need to be thinking about, we can talk about. And then, post-Christian. So even that term, in some ways I don't like, because it assumes that they know that they're after Christianity, but they don't even know that there was this Christianity, a lot of them. They just grow up not even thinking about this. So sometimes we use the word secular. They grew up in a secular age. If you listen to Chase a little bit earlier, he talks about that. And so this post-Christian culture, the post-Christian culture and the morally adrift are really twins in some ways. And they mirror each other and they reinforce each other. And so we have more and more of these students who don't know anything about Christianity. They don't know how to even talk about Christianity. If you talk with them, it's just a blank slate. Now, again, I'm talking about from the whole country's perspective. I know that some of you are in places where it's not that advanced. It's not that pronounced, perhaps. But I'm just looking at it from, you know, the big picture of the country. But not everything about Gen Z is bad, all right? So these are different frames, and there's some ways that we can think about using some of these, you may call them problems or issues, and looking for avenues to way to talk to them. So the first one is educational emphasis. In a lot of the surveys that are being done with Gen Z, they really want to go to college. They really want to emphasize the educational part. And so if that's true, we're going to see the largest generation with many of them wanting to go to college. So if you're in college ministry, then you should be happy because you're going to have more and more people coming into your sphere of influence, right? They also want to be entrepreneurs, a lot of them. And so that's not on the list, but that's part of that. And so someone said we need to be thinking about not just a Bible vacation Bible school, but vocational Bible school. How to work in the Bible, working with people who want to be entrepreneurs. The next one is diversity. Now, we talked about that. If you've got all these people who have grown up with other people who are different from them, or who maybe are children of two different parents from different cultures, different races, they can connect well with these two different groups or with other groups. And so sometimes we're afraid of diversity or we don't know what to do with it, but diversity could actually be a bridge to people who are not like you or not like your church. And so it's just like being bilingual. I mean, if you're bilingual, you can communicate with two very different cultures And so if you're around people who are different from you a lot, you begin to understand, hey, if someone's making a stereotype that's not true, I can say, you know, that's just not right. Or if I, you know, or sometimes I can say, well, I have been with these people, and yes, some of this is true, and let me tell you how to work with them and how to communicate better with them. So I see it as an advantage and an openness. So we talked about how a lot of them have no experience and are almost like a blank slate, but maybe the silver lining there is that they don't have hang-ups about church, or they haven't had a bad church experience, or maybe they're really struggling trying to figure out the meaning of life, and they've never had a conversation with anybody who understood what moral truth is. And so they might be very open to talking about that. Because I think we've all had conversations with the jaded person who has heard the gospel and they're not interested. Has anybody had a conversation with someone like that who's jaded? Raise your hands. Okay. The jaded person who's had the conversation who's not interested. But for many years, I did international student ministry, and I talked with people who had never heard the gospel, and they were very curious, and they wanted to have conversations, and they wanted to talk. So that could be a silver lining for us to explore and to try to leverage to share with them. All right? So those are some of the things that, that's just a real big picture of Gen Z, some things for you to think about. I don't know about time. Do we have time for questions? We have about 5 minutes. So if there's something here, just on these questions, Derek's still got more. Derek's got a lot more for us. But just on these things, some of the things I've talked about, is there a question maybe or you have about that? Yes, Mike.
Tom, do we see the end of Generation Z when that's going to, like, have that? And I asked that question for two reasons.
Yeah.
One, I've been seeing a lot of research Gen Z. So I guess it's two questions.
Yeah.
You see that in Gen Z, and then where's the end of that where we might see a lessening of a pool of students
right.
that are actually ready to go or able to go to college?
Yeah. I think that's very good. So I thought the first question you said, is there an end point in generation?
Yeah, where's the
yeah,
next year?
That we haven't. I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, things got a little bit easier just in January because Pew Research said 97,
okay.
I should have said this, 97 is when Gen Z starts, and it's been debated, but most people are going to follow what Pew says. So let's go with 97. They've not decided an end point. I think it's really muddy right now. We're still in it. But one of the things that our team is trying to do, and what I think your question hints at, is what is the definition of, quote, college, and what is the definition of a, quote, student?
Yeah.
And things have changed a lot, and there are a lot of people who are going to community college for financial reasons. There are a lot of people going back to college or community college because of transitions to jobs. And so that's very much in flux. And again, you have these young kids who are saying, I want to be an entrepreneur, I want to go to college, but that doesn't mean they're going to do it. So that's what I'm saying. Some of the surveys, you're dealing with middle school, some of them are 13, who knows, you know. But we definitely know from working with churches and college and doing research that the pathway through college has changed dramatically with online learning, dual enrollment, early college, high school, distant learning, all that stuff, homeschool, all this stuff has changed the pathways of how people get where they want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, does that help you?
Yeah, no, that's good.
Okay. Alright, so thank you guys. Derek is back up. Thank you, Derek.
Yep. So you think about the question of who are the students on today's campuses. Tom just gave you a quick snapshot of these are the students who are on the college campuses near you. I think of the days where college students come knocking on First Baptist door saying, hey, I want to be saved. What must I do to follow Jesus? Like, those days are over. Students are not flocking to your church trying to figure out how to follow Jesus. You have to go to them. But not only that, Tom gave you a snapshot of, like, these are the students who are on today's campuses. They don't believe in the Bible. They don't have a biblical worldview. And so that makes the task a little bit challenging. But that also means that churches have to think strategically and critically about reaching those students. I think about North Carolina. We have 185 campuses in the state of North Carolina. Of those 185 campuses, 106 of them are community colleges, and 79 of them are four-year universities. So let's look at this number. 106 of them are community colleges. Tom talked about that could be like someone from the age of 15 at an early college. That could be someone who is 67 years old. I mean, that's just a wide range of students right there if you're thinking about doing ministry at a community college. And then, of course, you have 79 that are four-year universities. And so just think for a moment. This is North Carolina. These are the students who are on the campuses today. And so that means we have a lot of work to do. And so our job and what I want to share in the last 5 minutes is just a practical way that you can start to go back to the campus that's closest to you and try to figure out how to reach college students. By show of hands, how many of you have a campus, a college, community college, or a four-year university within 10 miles of your church? Wow. What about 5 miles within your church? What about 2 miles? Wow. So that means two blocks. Amen. Afterwards, we're all just going to become real good friends and we're going to talk. I mean, you have college campuses literally in the back of your church. Like, talk about mission field. And I'm always afraid. Sometimes I get on tangents, but this is one of my tangents. I'm always afraid. And sometimes I envision if I get to heaven, God taps me on the shoulder and he says, hey, you know, look at all these people that you led to the Lord. And, you know, look, your children are in heaven, you know, and all these other people are in heaven. But then God says to me, but those people right across the street are not in heaven because, Derek, you never went across the street to your neighbors to share the gospel, or you never went, you know, right 2 blocks or 3 blocks or 1 mile up the street to the college campus that's closest to you where people are in desperate need of Jesus. And so we have a huge task and we want to be faithful as ministers of the gospel to do our very best to reach those students. And so I just want to quickly go through this model that I began to flesh out a couple years ago. Me and some friends were trying to figure out how to do inner city ministry. And we made a mistake of going to this impoverished community with all of these gifts and just kind of dumped them off on the neighborhood. They were like, yeah, we want flat screen TVs and like all these things. And so we were like, hey, this is gospel ministry. Like, let's just give them what they asked for. This was before we read When Helping Hurts, because if you read that book, we just messed them up for life. But then after that, we realized they didn't want to come to our church. They didn't want anything to do with us. And so I heard one pastor say, man, you have to learn how to go, see, feel, and do. And I'm like, go, see, feel, and do. He's like, yeah, go, see, feel, and do. And he didn't really flesh it out, but it stuck with me. And I began to process that and add some meat to it and begin to think through this model of feel, see, and act. And so when I think about feeling, see, feel, and act. Got it. So when I think about seeing, I think about a practical thing that you can do is just go on the college campus, 2 blocks away, 3 miles, 4 miles, wherever. Go on the college campus and just start walking around praying. Just pray. God, I pray for your spirit to move on this campus. God, I pray that you will open a door for us on this campus. Just pray over the campus. Ask God to give you a vision of the campus. See where the students are hanging out. See when the students have a break. See where the students eat, work, play. What are the students doing? Like, you might go on campus and you might see, oh, there's a robot club that meets at 1 p.m. where all the students kind of get their little robots and gadgets and they're playing. So maybe we need to kind of reach out to these students. So what if you just go to the campus and just walk around, spend an hour walking around on the campus with a journal, jotting down every single observation that you can make of, and then take it back to God in prayer. So what things can you practically see on the campus? Secondly, feel. One of the things that I heard a pastor say before is that proximity breeds empathy. There's no way I can be empathetic to the things that you're facing if I'm not in close proximity with you. And so when you get on the college campus, ask God to break your heart for the things that breaks his heart. Ask God to give you a deep burden for the lostness on that particular campus. And I'm pretty sure God will give you a burden for it, because guess what God wants to do? He wants to send you out into the harvest field to make disciples. And so we need to be asking God, Lord, give us a heart for these people. That could mean that they come from different socioeconomic status from you or your family or your church. Many of the community colleges that I've noticed, they have food pantries because a lot of the students are living in poverty-stricken situations. And so that might mean, God, break my heart for students who don't have meals. God, break my heart for those who are less fortunate than me. God, break my heart for those who don't look like me, who come from a different race. God, break my heart for the person who doesn't even believe Jesus exists. God, give me a heart and the patience that I need for them. So how do you develop this sense of a feeling for them? And then lastly, act. Do something. Do something. That means you might set up a meeting with the chancellor. That might mean that you are out on campus and you ask a student some questions about faith or religion. That might mean you just say, hey, we're going to ask the president of the university if we can just bless the teachers or if we can just do some type of event to bless the campus. What is it that you can do to act out on what you've experienced on that campus? Does that make sense? And so this is just some of the ways that I've seen churches begin to do that. I think of a specific church in Boone, a smaller rural church, Laurel Springs Church. And they had a desire to reach App State. If you know anything about Appalachian State, it is a very dark, dark, dark place. And they wanted to reach that campus. And where they started was they just started by going on a prayer walk. And they had people who were retired within their church. I mean, it was beautiful to see a wide range of ages of people just going out on campus, prayer walking and asking God to give them a vision, asking God to open a door. And as they began to prayer walk, they began to meet people. They started calling the university saying, hey, I see you have an international program. Our church will love to like host internationals. And so they just started doing all of these things. And before you know it, not too long ago, they just had an event at their church where they're now doing ministry to international students. But it started with them just getting out on the campus and seeing what the campus looks like and getting a feel for what the campus needs. And then God opened a clear door for them to engage international students, students who've probably never heard the gospel, students who will graduate from App State and go back to their prospective countries with the gospel of Jesus Christ and then sharing that message to their country. And that's what we want to see. We want to see Revelation 7:8. We want to see the nations reached. And so that is a great opportunity. That is about all of the time we have. I lastly just want to close out with our mission statement, because this is going to help you understand how we want to partner with you potentially. And so our desire is to partner with churches to reach the campus that's closest to them by helping you develop a college ministry that best fits your model. Basically, what that means is if you have a Sunday school class on Sundays and you want college students to come to that class, we're not going to partner with you and say, hey, get rid of the Sunday school model. It's not working. It's outdated. No, we're going to develop with you strategies that best fits your church. So whatever your model of ministry or discipleship is, we want to come alongside of you and help you reach students that way. Secondly, we want to help you understand, as Tom just shared, understand the landscape. These are the students on today's campus. Here are some statistics. Here are some even resources that we might have to help you educate you on that. And then we want to give you more resources to help you better fulfill that. And then lastly, connect you with other collegiate leaders across the state. We're connected to people, and we want to connect you to someone who might be in Boone or Wilmington or Brevard, just different places doing college ministry. That is all of the time we have. We wanted to leave about 5 minutes for you to kind of throw out questions about college ministry.
Okay, so I know we talked about, you presented the people in college right now. One of the key factors or one of their key values is diversity. And I think one of my like mental stumbling blocks almost is saying we want church-based ministry going on to college campuses. How do you do that if you feel like, okay, I want to witness to these people who value diversity. I also value diversity. I feel like our church is still making progress toward that. How would you see best fit to even get people to like want to come into your church, college students?
Yeah, so the question on the floor is, what happens if you value diversity, your church is growing in that concern, but the audience, the population that you're trying to minister to doesn't look like you, then how do you go about trying to engage them? That's a really good question. I think off the top of my head, I just think relationships. developing relationships with people and showing concern for people. Sometimes I feel like we're so quick. Like, I think about Jesus and his ministry. In often cases in the gospel, he took care of a physical need before he got to the spiritual. And sometimes I think we jump straight to, you need Jesus and come to my church and let me share the gospel with you, rather than getting to know the human being right before you. So it is, Judy, tell me about you. Where do you come from? What's your story? You know, I want to personally get to know Judy because she's created in the Imago Dei. And that opens the door for people to go, hey, you care about me. And so I just always say skin color does not weaken the gospel. The gospel is the power of God for salvation. And so regardless of skin color, the gospel is going to do what it does. But I believe that it starts with a relationship and humanizing the person before you, like seeing them for who they are and not just a means to an end or a task, if that makes sense. I don't know if that really answers it, but I think that's a good starting place is concern. And trying to develop a relationship.
What are some differences, nuts and bolts wise, you see in community college ministry versus a four-year university? Because I'm an adjunct at a four-year university of a Baptist institution. Because I do online, but my church I'm serving is, you know, half a mile from community college. So mm-hmm. It's different demographic wise. What are some nuts and bolts you guys have seen from your aspect?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The guy on the same row with you is the expert in that. He will do a great job. Evan, no, Evan, could you answer that, please?
You're going to have people from your church. I mean, you're going to have people who look just like the church. In the community college, they are going to be people who are from the community, who stay in the community after they're done with school, whereas a four-year university, they're going to come into the school and leave. So you think of community college as being shorter. You think of it being one semester at a time, and so you kind of pass it off. The tendency is to kind of like push it aside like it's nothing. But the truth is, the people in your church are made up of people just like the community college. They're going to be your nurses. They're going to be your plumbers. They're going to be your people who are preparing to get their, you know, cosmetology degree, all those kind of things. People who are serving in the fire department, the police department. Those departments are stocked by local community colleges. And so when you're talking about services in your community, how can the church bless those students and get in there and get their hands dirty? Well, how many police officers do you have in the church? And how often have you connected a police officer to the basic law enforcement program at the community college? That's like an
mentorship type.
Yeah. Or a Bible study or a chaplainship or something. How often have you said, hey, you know, this nursing program right here needs a nurse from our church to come in there and lead a nursing-focused Bible study that eventually, as an ultimate thing, takes them on a medical mission trip, right? And so that's huge to be mm-hmm. able to insert your people into the life of the community college in a way that just starting a random all come, all welcome Bible study may not work. The thing that I would say is that this has as much to do with our ability to empower the people in our church as it does with who we're reaching. Because this is a training opportunity for our church to go, hey, by the way, you're more equipped than the pastor to do this. Nurse, local nurse who's never been to China, never found a mission field, needs to see something as a mission field. Community college is now your mission field, you know? So I think the difference is the four-year university, if you go to High Point University 5 minutes down this road right here, I live here at High Point, so I can say this, that is the nicest school in the States. I mean, maybe by $1 trillion. I mean, it is, I mean, embroidered everything, probably gold on the bottom of every swimming pool. I mean, just nuts. Mm-hmm. If you drive through this town, that is, they have everything they need. Community college, if you go to them and say, here's a cheese sandwich, they're going to be like, man, that's awesome. That's awesome. And so they don't have anybody falling head over heels for them, whereas all these other mm-hmm. schools, they do. And so I would just say that the kind of the harvest is totally right, but in a real tangible way for community college. I mean, you could literally walk on campus and go, I'm here to serve, and they'll go, please, thank you, you know, and that's so cool.
Yeah, they provide a great, you know, community college is a great opportunity for local churches to to see themselves as servants and in ways to serve. And then I would just add, like, it's community college, this sense of urgency. Whereas at a four-year university, you have 4 years. So you get a freshman into your church. You have 4 years to disciple them and develop them and train them up. You get a community college student, and it's like they could be gone the next semester or two semesters later. And so you have to start thinking, man, I got to get them, you know, there's this sense of urgency. I need to develop them, disciple them to the best of my ability. And then, you know, so they can be sent out. But yeah, lots of opportunities at community colleges.
I would just add to that, too, that if you're wanting to start a college ministry or you're in a college ministry at your church, you have to go into it knowing that your population is going to be different. Like, you're going to have a lot of turnover every semester, every year, maybe from weekend to weekend, and you just have to understand that and stay consistent in what you do. I've talked with churches before that have started ministries and they give up. Well, we had 20 people the first week, and then next week there were five, and, you know, and then after 3 or 4 weeks, they just stop, and they're not considering fall breaks, spring breaks. These kids are traveling back home to visit their families. So if you're going to, I always encourage you, if you're going to get involved with college ministry, you have to embrace that it's constantly changing. It's not like teaching a Sunday school class of people that live in your neighborhood, and you can't get discouraged or disheartened. Even if you go on campus and lead a Bible study, if they allow you to do that, you're going to have different students every week or every other week, and you just have to stay faithful and consistent in that, not let it discourage you.
Yeah, that's good.
One real quick. One example is a guy at Johnston Community College that we tout a lot, but he has found another guy who is a truck driver, trucking company owner. And that guy has started some kind of Bible study for truckers, for the trucking industry training program at the community college. Now, here's the catch. That trucking training is only 8 weeks long. So me in my head, I go, well, that's not long enough to develop leaders, to do a Bible study, develop a consensus, to do a leadership pipeline and everything like that. They just tailored what they do to the 8-week course and said, now we're only going to do this, this, and this. And they do it for 8 weeks. And they have 50 or 60 students coming through there every 8 weeks, right? So they're hitting a huge population through just the truck training thing. So that's the difference between community college. You just have to change your brain. You know, it's more about changing our brains than changing them, you know?
Yeah, that's good.
Thanks, sorry.
Any more questions? We have time for one more.
About starting a group. You know, part of it was a group.
Yes.
You know, we literally... I can't hit a golf ball to it, but he can. He can hit a golf ball to the campus in return. It's, to me, we know that campus that you're talking about has been very close to evangelical Christianity. It's been very liberal.
Is that Brevard?
Yeah, it's connected to the school, but it's just way out there. How do you get that group? I mean, I know they're not going to come to us. We know. I explained this to my staff yesterday. God's led on my heart. We need to plan a work for our college. Then this guy emails me today, so it's kind of weird.
Holy Spirit.
Yeah. I was shaking when I was reading. I said, this can't be happening. But what should the success rate of getting a place on a campus like that where you can take it to them rather than them coming to us? How do you form that group mentality once you get to that level of the ministry?
That's a great question. Tom Knight, take it away. I'm humble. When I don't know an answer, I turn it over to one of my teammates.
I think we could have a longer conversation with you, because the problem is with a private school, they're going to be able to put up more blocks, more roadblocks than, say, a public school. And that's something that all of us on the team, we all discuss this and think about this. But sometimes it starts with maybe one student who's coming to you, who's already, I mean, you can find that one believer, and then you help them, train them to see them going back as a missionary and helping them, equip them to do some ministry until you can get that core group kind of together. But Mike's got some good advice too, but there's...
Well, I would just say look for, our situation is different because it's a historical... I mean, let me get the wording right. They're a historical Baptist university. But so we get roadblocks through the group that you would think would be the most open.
Yeah.
So we're having to find connections on other places that have been surprising. So I think that may be a way, is like if you have somebody that's connected in business that could get into the business department, or get in our case, the medical school, or wherever. We can't get in through spiritual life, but we can get in some of those other non-traditional avenues that could open up a door for a group. I mean, that,
y'all, we've got the AD, the believer, the basketball coach sends his kid to our Awanas. I mean, we've got avenues, but we're, I mean, that next step, what we
need to do.
Maybe that conversation needs to happen outside of here. But.
Yeah, let's make that happen. That'd be good. That's great. Thank you so much for your time with us.